Chapter 20. Virginia. Nucleus. As Victor's dreadnought, the Pandemonia, heads toward our main fleet over the North Pole, my war shuttle descends from the Deja Thoris toward Phobos, the largest pincushion mankind has ever built. Orbiting only 6,000 kilometers from the surface of Mars, Phobos circles its primary body closer than any other moon in the system. That means it moves fast and takes only 7 hours and 39 minutes to complete its orbit. It is not a big moon, certainly not compared to the moons of the gas giants or Earth. It is only 22 kilometers in diameter. Though, over 7 centuries, humanity has stacked on another 3 kilometers of cityscape in almost every direction. Hundreds of skyscrapers pierce the moon's crust. The rich live in the needles at the tips of the buildings, with the city's population density growing the closer one draws to the surface of the moon. The population thins again as one crawls down into the belly of the moon. The hollows, where the sediments of Phobos's population gather in eerie dimness surrounding the gravity generators. Much of the population has been evacuated, but not all. Tens of millions of people take a long time to move, especially when they do not all cooperate. As the heart of our orbital defense complex, Phobos is well guarded. New grand guns and clever pyramid-shaped fortresses loom on its cityscape. Most are positioned to defend its precious Julii Sun docks, which are synced in orbit around Phobos like 2 intercrossed bandoliers. Forests of jagged towers reach past the docks. Amidst them stand monuments to heroes of the rising. Some are carved in stone, many in ice. Kavix catches my eyes lingering on Io's statue. But soon she has passed, and then there is only Quicksilver's monument to my husband. Darrow bursts into view, towering and terrible over the North Pole, glaring toward the distant sun. Though my husband is still out there somewhere in the vast expanse of space, I feel him with me. It is a consolation that, if he is alive, I know he is on his way home, maybe even looking at Mars as a distant but growing star in his viewport. He'll see the energy wash of the battle if he's near, I say absently to Holiday. I hope it doesn't make him do anything stupid. He won't, Holiday says. I turn on her. He's with Bellona and Severo. Put them together and the stupidity turns to be exponential. Holiday doesn't break eye contact. I feel safe around her surety. You will see him again. Your son will see him again. I know that man. If he made it off Mercury, he can make it home. He's hard as nails and slippery as a fish. I nod in gratitude and turn my gaze to the enemy. The Rim and Core Armada that has come to conquer my home is little more than stardust in the distance. Their high velocity suggests they intend to pierce our defensive shell in an attempt to deploy an iron rain. So much for the conservative siege we'd once expected. At least Atalantia isn't with them. A rain, I say, with a shake of my head. I really didn't think the Rim had it in them. Maybe Apollonius is in command after all.
Helios would never cede the battle plan to a core gold, much less Apollonius, Kavik says, his gaze on the Pandemonia and his thoughts on Thraxa.
Only just returned and back to the fray.
Sophocles is likelier to feed me jelly beans.
It's early yet, I say. I suppose we will see. A rectangle of light forms 3/4 of the way up Bastion 1 to permit us access. 40 heavy assault shuttles follow mine into the pyramidal fortress. I leave most of my lion guards in the hangars and ride the high-security lift with Kavix and Holiday down into the belly of Bastion 1. With my head down, I trudge out as soon as the doors open. Ahead, a symphony of bolts and oiled steel clunks and rasps. Interdiction slabs shift and security doors dilate open to grant us access to the military nerve center of Phobos, the nucleus. Petty officers scatter to the side as my cavalcade enters. The door guards announce me.
The Sovereign of the Republic.
500 officers and technicians snap to attention at their stations around the interior of the sphere that comprises the nucleus. I plunge toward the command platform at its center. The best of the Republic's naval aristocracy wait there for me. Most are holograms beamed in from their ships. Even at short range, the enemy's electronic warfare degrades their avatars. A few of my legates wait off to the side. I step onto the command deck.
Void.
A white-walled cathedral of silence forms around the officers. Oro, the blue commander of Phobos, is 60 and lean as a bloodhound. His cobalt eyes are ringed with the insomniac circles of a Dostoevsky protagonist.
Imperator Julii is nearly in place. Phobos stands ready. OBC control is yours, my sovereign.
He sets a glossy black battle crown on my head. The crown gives me access to the nucleus's systems, and the sudden influx of information is similar in sensation to being ducked into cold water at high speed. A few breaths, and I adjust to the stream.
This is the sovereign. I have the crown.
200 battle station commanders confirm. With the crown, I can micromanage them, but not the fleet itself. I am not as good as my imperators are at their jobs, so no need to bother. I wave my hand and Mars appears in the air. The visual of the battlefield resembles a three-dimensional representation of a cell, with Mars surrounded by a dense orbital shell of neutrons and protons, her orbital battle station complex, or OBC. They orbit in two staggered shells. Shell 1 at 6,000 kilometers from the surface, Shell 2 is at 3,000. There are minefields in the gaps between the stations, along with a dazzling array of gun batteries on the surface of Mars, but the surface guns will come into play only if they launch an iron rain. To launch an iron rain, they have to get through both layers of the OBC. Static defenses are never enough on their own, not in this epoch of warfare. Spears went through chainmail, after all. The OBC may look dense on the display, but if the map was to scale, the size of the gaps between the battle stations would startle an amateur's eye. The fleet and the OBC must work in tandem. I watch the spear that represents Victor's flagship slide into place over the North Pole. Her fleet is new and heavy and nearly a match for the core contingent in the enemy armada on its own. The other two strike forces match the rim ships well enough in tonnage, if not speed. With the planet, Phobos, and the OBC, the battle is ours to lose. Oddly, that makes me nervous.
Imperator's report, I say. Pandemonia is in the pocket. Task Force Spear stands ready,
Victor says. Niobe, Kavix's wife, reports from the South Pole.
Task Force Fox ready.
Task Force Warlock ready.
Colloway Char was eager to be put to use. The hero has been promoted to Imperator today and commands my Deja Thoris and my household ships in defense of Phobos. There is nothing to do now but wait and see where the enemy intends to focus the thrust of their attack. Darrow would loathe sacrificing the initiative, but Victra, Oro, and the Blue Hive all agree the defensive posture gives us more advantages. To attack with the fleet beyond the kill zone of the OBC guns is to waste those guns and equal the odds. And with Victra's powerful fleet on the pole, she can meet the enemy wherever they thrust. I watch with Kavix, Holiday, and my commanders as the enemy armada creeps closer. 30 minutes becomes 20. 20 becomes 10. A sea of radio chatter from the hundreds of rip-wing squadron leaders murmurs in the background. The enemy is arranged in 6 spherical battle groups and 1 floater. The Dustmaker, the powerful moonbreaker of Helios Aulux, leads the creme of the Rim fleet. Dido leads another group in her husband's old dreadnought, Shadow Dragon. Diomedes leads the smallest and nimblest group from his destroyer, Charybdis. I keep an eye on that one. The core groups are led by Julia Albalona, Apollonius, and Cicero Avotum. Julius is the strongest group and populated with the flagships of many moderate houses. Cicero leads the reformers and the Votum ships. Apollonius leads the smallest but newest group of ships, ones he must have acquired as master of the dockyards of Venus. Niobe is keyed on him. Trailing behind those battle groups is a sight that boils the blood of all Republic patriots, the Floater Fleet, led by the Morning Star. Though its transponders say the ship has been rechristened as the Lightbringer. To see Darrow's ship in Lysander's perfumed hands disgusts me. It is the biggest thing on the field. At 8 kilometers in length, it outstrips the older Dustmaker in length by 2 kilometers, Victrus Pandemonia by 3, and My Deja Thoris by 4. Its refurbishment is clearly not complete. It's not even painted, and looks like Frankenstein's monster, its hull a heterogeneous patchwork of steel harvested off the carcasses of the White Fleet, which Atalantia crushed over Mercury. I wish Orion and Darrow were here to take their ship back. Your intelligence still believes the Lightbringer poses no true tactical threat? I ask Oro, dubious. Indeed, less than a third of its surface guns have been replaced, and its reactor output readings are meager. No one has ever heard of her captain, and Loon would need years to rebuild a talented ecosystem of House Blues. The ship is like the boy, a hollow symbol. He is taunting us to lure us out, tempting us to take her back. Then let's not be lured, I say to all my imperators.
Seems Loon somehow profited off the chaos on Venus. Are those ships a bribe from House Carthii?
Kavix muses, and squints at the 9 unpainted destroyers that surround the Lightbringer.
Those are fresh off the spindles. 2 don't even have surface guns. How can he possibly crew them?
Bellona, I wager.
Kavix comes closer.
Does your source have any insight?
I shake my head. Not about this. And I'd doubt him even more if he did. Kavix nods, happy our strategy is our own and not my sources. A strange report comes from Oro.
My sovereign, they're reducing velocity.
He's right. I turn off the command deck's void to see the blues of my tactics hive chittering to each other. Soon they present an adjusted list of the enemy's potential tactics and attack vectors, ordered by probability.
Virginia, are you seeing this?
Victor asks.
I see. What is Helios doing? Victor murmurs.
Speed is their only advantage. Does he want to spend more time in the gauntlet of our guns?
It might not be Helios in command after all. Eccentricity is Apollonius's forte, I reply. Maybe a split command? I glance at Holiday to shore up my anxiety about sabotage.
All vital installations have been swept, my sovereign. Every reactor, every shield generator is under watch,
she reaffirms.
If the enemy wants passage, they must pay for it.
All is in order, yet a nagging thought remains. Why, in Minerva's name, would they dare attack without Atalantia in the first place? Why take these odds? There is nothing to do but wait and find out. Gods, I hate playing defense.